Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast is here. I'm the host, Jay Hicks, back behind the mic on Saturday night, April 11th, 2015. The tax deadline is in 4 days, people. If you haven't filed your taxes yet, shame on you. You got to get that stuff done, man. And I mean, anybody that's listening to this, let's be honest, anybody that's listening to this podcast, probably getting a refund check. Therefore, you probably already filed your taxes and all that. I mean, I'm just saying, you know, whatever. I mean, I know I did, so I'm ahead of the game, I guess. I don't know. Thank you for listening, though. This is what we do on a Saturday night. I talk to y'all. I don't go out. I don't kick it. I'm not in the club and nothing like that. I want to talk to you people. I want to talk to the listeners right in your ear holes. Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast, thank you for joining us once again. We have a very special guest this evening. Before we get into bringing him on, I want to first of all say congratulations to the Duke Blue Devils and the UConn Huskies for winning the NCAA tournament for men and women's college basketball, respectively. Guys both had a great run. I feel like I'm congratulating them every year. It seems like they win every year. One of them does, at least. But nevertheless, they had a great run. I was a little bit upset about my personal predictions. I thought, you know, as you saw, you guys heard the last podcast, we had three of the four Final Four teams correct. I told you guys it's going to be mostly chalk, and I was right about that. However, I didn't get Michigan State out of the East region. I was a little bummed by that, and that's my bad. I should have seen that one coming. But I did get Kentucky, Duke, and Wisconsin in there, and I thought Kentucky was going to make that move to the title, but I was a little bit frustrated with myself again, because typically when I make my picks, y'all, I err on the side of history. And history says that Kentucky more than likely was not going to make history because the team hadn't gone undefeated since the mid-70s. So I should have seen all that coming. I apologize to y'all. Please forgive me. But getting off that real quick, welcome again to the Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast. I'm your man, Jay Hicks. Hit up the website at hiphopsportsreport.com. Also, you can find the podcast on iTunes and on Stitcher. We're also on all over social media, twitter.com/HHSReport, facebook.com/HHSReport. We got a lot of cool stuff on there of late. Obviously, we talked about Big Sean's album that just dropped back in February. So please check out that Tale of the Tape. That's the latest one, in addition to the one that we did on Lupe Fiasco not that long ago. Got another article coming out sometime tomorrow that involves Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods, y'all. Look out for that. And I think that pretty much wraps it up, man. Preseason podcast of the year. We're bringing in our special guest for the evening. Very special guy who actually is chiefly responsible for this podcast being on iTunes. True story. And so, and I actually had the wonderful opportunity to be on his podcast, the Sunday Old School podcast. You guys may remember that. And we talked a little bit about Face Mob that time, Scarface. It was a wonderful experience for me personally. And we knew we had to return the favor at some point. And so we figured right now, with the NBA playoffs right around the corner and all that's going on in the world of hip hop music, this guy is a basketball and hip hop aficionado, much like myself. What better time to have him on the podcast? So welcome. Please welcome to the preseason podcast of the year on the Your Ad Here hotline. Still looking for sponsors. Mr. Cray Allred, thank you for joining us this evening. Cray, how you doing?
I'm doing well, man. Thanks for having me.
No doubt, man. No doubt. And again, as I pointed out, you know, you had a lot to do with getting this podcast on iTunes. And so we thank you very much for that, because without you, we might not be there as of yet. And we've seen a lot of growth in the podcast and in the site in general. There's a lot of big changes coming up with the website in general. And, you know, you were a large part of that. So that's not lost on me. Introduce yourself to our listeners, please. And tell us a little bit about your podcast.
No problem. I'm happy we, through a mutual person, got put in touch, I guess, a year and a half or so ago. But that was, I'm stoked that I got to find out about you and your site and your podcast. And, you know, you came on our site, and I was actually thinking through one of the podcasts I was doing. You gave me some input there. So it was a mutually beneficial arrangement. So what I do, I have a day job, but the stuff I'm passionate about, I do some freelance writing and podcasting. I write right now for Welcome to Loud City, which is a SB Nation blog for the Oklahoma City Thunder. And the podcast that I host is called Sunday Old School. It's a hip hop podcast, and it's designed to be helpful for Christians. It's not about Christian hip hop. It is about hip hop, just hip hop. But Christians sometimes have kind of a weird relationship with hip hop. They're kind of spooked out by it or think it's sinful or whatever. So we're trying to kind of make it edible and try to teach Christians how to better kind of understand and relate to it and enjoy it for what it is.
Word up. And I think that that's admirable. I think that there's something to be said for that. I think that there's a lot of people, specifically older people of a different generation, and I don't even think it's race specific. I think black or white, it can be the same, that are kind of put off by hip hop and they don't feel like it's beneficial. They think it's too violent. They think they find all the negativity in the music, and they rarely do the digging or reach out to try to extract the positivity in the music. There's a lot of new music that's out right now. Speaking of whether it be positive hip hop or otherwise, you know, what's caught your ear of late?
Oh, this year, I'm of course listening to Pimp a Butterfly, which I think everyone is at this point. I really liked, Lupe Fiasco's latest and you put up a good review of that as well. One of my favorites from this year has been, Joey Badass. I've really been digging that. Kind of my go-to is still Kanye West. I think I'm just starting to figure out. I'm either figuring out Yeezus for the first time really right now, or I'm overthinking it because it's been so long. But I just wrote a paper on Kanye and ended up just wishing I had written like 10 essays on Yeezus because I'm so into it right now. So this is kind of what I'm listening to at the moment.
You're a better man than me, Craig, because Yeezus is collecting proverbial dust on my computer because I haven't touched it in a while. I was not a fan when it came out. And even Kanye is such an interesting cat. And I applaud him for stepping outside the box and doing something that's different and that hasn't been heard before or tried even necessarily with hip hop. But I mean, I personally just didn't like the music that much, just from a pure, you know, sonically or whatever, however you want to phrase it. I just wasn't a fan of the music, but it sounds like you're pulling out some deeper meanings behind the lyrics and kind of what they went into. I mean, obviously he had a lot to say on that record about his struggles to kind of break through in the fashion industry and whether or not, the racism in this country, which is obviously still prevalent, something that you've spoken to on your podcast on several occasions. And just his overall opinion of the entertainment industry. There was a lot of stuff like that. I mean, what are you learning now about Yeezus that maybe you didn't know when it first came out?
Yeah, so pretty much what you're getting at. Nothing like profound or groundbreaking, but I think his publicity campaign along with that was kind of distracting to the album. Like, everyone was like, wow, Kanye's mad. This is an angry record. I think it was Rick Rubin that kind of propelled the idea that Kanye just made a bunch of ugly music and then at the last minute threw verses on it, where Rubin didn't say the music was bad, but a lot of people were like, you know, this is just kind of a middle finger to people that want to hear pleasant-sounding music because of the mood he's in. I think there is a lot of that in it. Obviously, it's not a super easy album to listen to, from content and from just the kind of dissonant sound all the way through it. But going through it, so I was studying for kind of my whole. I was like kind of looking at Kanye's career arc and where he's gone from College Dropout to now. And I think there's a lot of hints in Yeezus of his more, you know, happier, pleasant style, the more lighter stuff that kind of break through in different moments. So like On Sight, there's a quick little interlude that's really kind of like a chorus sounding, and then he breaks back in to kind of the gutter sound. And then New Slaves has a really, really kind of ethereal outro that's really long and beautiful, I think. And then the big one is Bound, too, where it's really a, you know, it's a pop record, and it's about, in Kanye's way, about family life, about how he's arriving there. And it's pretty hopeful way to end such a tough-to-swallow album. But I think he's doing a lot of things in it, but I think, like you mentioned, racism, entertainment, and fashion industry, I think he is intentionally throwing together, like, black civil rights, capitalism, and sexuality. And he's just, like, cramming them together in, like, really uncomfortable ways. And I think Blood on the Leaves is, like, the height of how, like, really he's using this sample to talk about, you know, a broken relationship and about baby mamas and trying to get an anchor baby and all this kind of, and, you know, alimony payments and all this stuff. But I think he's not just willy-nilly throwing the stuff together. I think he was in this mindset at the time, and this was where he was ranting about. He is one of the rare people to kind of break into the upper level of entertainment and then at the time fashion. And he's looking around and coming back and saying, where everyone is hearing him say, you know, I'm brilliant, I'm special, no one appreciates me. And there's plenty of that in there. But also he's saying, a lot of it's because I'm black, that there's not room for me because of who I am. And when I get up there, there's no one else that looks like me. And so I think he really sees, he's not just an egomaniac. I think he sees the next step as far as bigger money, bigger culture influencers, you know, owning the radio station, not just having the hits on the radio, that he sees that as the new frontier for black progress. And I think, you know, most hip hop heads at least kind of caught that. But as far as just kind of the general reception of the album, it was pretty much just taken as, oh, Kanye's mad, this is an ugly album, and he's gross. I think he's a lot more intentional than that.
It's funny that you bring all that up, especially the part about him being more of an entrepreneur actively rather than just being a musician who makes songs and then goes on tour and goes home. The scuttle right now is that Kanye is partnering with Damon Dash, who's been in the news a lot recently, and that together they're going to be buying Karmaloop, which is a clothing website that has gotten really popular, and it's kind of exploded. And now you have somebody like Kanye West and Damon Dash trying to partner up and potentially buy Karmaloop. And I think that speaks to two things. The one, you have the fashion element that you discussed Kanye is very fond of. In addition to that, there's the ownership element, which anybody that's been listening to Damon Dash's interviews of late knows that he feels very strongly about ownership, specifically within the black community. And I actually agree with him 110% on that. As a black male, I think I can safely say that we don't own nearly enough of our own businesses and business ventures in this country. And people like to throw on the word slavery. I don't know how accurate that word always is when it comes to talking about the financial state of black America, but I will say that owning our own businesses will help us go quite a long way in the getting out from under whatever boot that may be holding black people down. And so now you have Damon Dash and Kanye partnering once again, kind of bearing the hatchet and smoothing over any tension that there might have been after Kanye ditched Damon and went with Jay-Z many years ago, about 10 years ago or whatever, when The Rock disintegrated. And now you have those guys doing work together once again. What are your thoughts on two things, on Damon Dash's kind of approach to business, because he's been in the news so much lately? And then in addition to that, kind of getting back to the music a little bit, Kanye has over the years consistently brought these religious themes back to the forefront. Almost every album has been kind of heavily draped in this religious talk, religious theme, all going all the way back to Jesus Walks and his last album, Yeezus, and now his next album, So Help Me God. Who knows where he's going to go with that? How do you feel like that album is going to shake out as compared to his other ones? And as a very Christian person, I don't know if that's the right phrasing to use, but a man of God, we'll just call you a man of God. As a man of God, and how do you feel about him consistently going back to this well and him partnering with Dame Dash?
So part of my thing is I am not a business. I don't read business news. So I kind of have to take Kanye's word for it, all that, and same thing with Damon Dash. But I think I haven't seen a lot of counter arguments saying, you know, here actually proportionally, you know, there are black entrepreneurs that are given these opportunities, on and on and on, and you know, these people are overreacting. So. And I've definitely heard it specifically in fashion that it's just a pretty racist industry where they're still doing blackface on the covers of like big time magazines. So and I would say entertainment wise, you know, hip hop is entertainment in a lot of ways. Like it is the dominant foundation for almost all of entertainment now. From fashion to music to comedy to just style that runs through all of it. So I'd say they folks like them should be reaching to be on top of it, to actually be on top of it, not to be the face of it, you know, in the videos and on the radio and what people think of, but to actually be running it. And I think that's what they're going for. And we might get into the title in a minute, but I think that's another extension of that. Where they're saying, yeah, we need to, it's one thing to be loved for our art and for, you know, our hand in the music game, but we think there's a place for us as, you know, business people. And so I think all, more power to them. And as far as like religion and Kanye's music, he definitely was not in. What's crazy about Yeezus is obviously his most blasphemous album where he's calling himself a god. I think he's almost entirely doing it tongue in cheek, but he's still flirting with blasphemy. At least he doesn't want to meet anyone's expectations ever, and I think that's always going to be part of his music. But at the same time, Yeezus, while he is really going on a tear publicly, it's also when he became even more vocal about his faith. And, you know, he's wearing a WWJD bracelet. He's going on talk shows talking about how he's a committed Christian. Everything he does, he's doing for God. And made a lot of people roll their eyes, I think, because a lot of people are not really into understanding people as complex individuals or as seeing Christians as people that can also they don't put up a front of being holy all the time. And he doesn't do that at all. So my guess is where he's going with this new album is going to be into a really soulful place, I'm thinking. I think he's going to be spending a lot of time with spiritual ideas. He's never really dropped them for any of albums. I'd say 808s and Heartbreaks is the kind of least spiritual album and more straight on love and relationship kind of album. But with everything going on in his personal life and the little bits that we've heard from some of the record, the album coming up, my guess is that he's kind of doubled down on that kind of spiritual contentedness he has and say, yes, I'm going to continue writing music as a Christian and talking about God. That's what I started doing, and I wouldn't apologize for it, and I'm going to keep doing it. And I'm intrigued, to say the least, on what that might sound like and what it might look like for Kanye in, you know, 2015 versus Kanye so long ago.
Considering that you said that it's borderline blasphemy, a lot of the stuff he talks about, even on Yeezus, do you ever find yourself grappling with, internally, with whether or not you should be a fan of his music, or you should support this guy because he makes great music and he has a lot to say. But at the same time, he does kind of, at the very least, he toes that line. He's coming pretty close, and you know, he's, some might even say he's a habitual line stepper. I mean, do you find yourself ever like being like, man, this guy, I really like this guy, I really want to like this guy, but he makes it really hard for me to like him, considering that I am a man of God?
You know, in the past, yes. I've always been fascinated by Kanye, and always, you know, just on a music level, loved pretty much everything he's put out. And for a long time, I was kind of back and forth. I think I actually, my hip-hop co-host, Sam, on Sunday Old School, we would just have regular check-ins with each other and be like, okay, what's the verdict on Kanye now? Like, for a long time, I was like, I don't know if Kanye hates everyone. I don't know if Kanye knows what he thinks. I don't know if it's all a big joke. I don't know if he's sincere. But I would say eventually he just won me over. Musically, that's easy for him to do, where he can really, I really think he's that talented, where if he really wanted to be just owning hip-hop from a music standpoint and just working on that at all times, I think he could constantly be doing that and constantly just be on top from that. But also just his personality, he makes you either love him or hate him. And most people that know him are super loyal to him, and he's a super loyal guy as well. And to me, like, he is anyone that everyone hates is someone that I want to love. As a Christian especially, right? So if there is, I've even written an article about Kanye for a Christian website about how you can't just bash people that you don't know based on one or two regrettable incidences that you know of, and say that it's Christian, and say that, you know, you're righteous in just mocking and hating someone in public. I think that's garbage. And I would also say, just from like the content of his music, there's one way in which that's kind of a constant thing for me with any music, not just hip hop, not just Kanye, where I am mindful of, you know, what's on it and maybe what kind of things it's kicking up in my heart, what kind of mood it's put me in, what kind of things I'm thinking about when I'm listening to it. But honestly, Kanye's approach, earlier when you're being kind, you're saying, you know, I'm a man of God, whatever, and, you know, I do call myself a Christian. There's a lot of music made by Christians that gives lip service to the idea that we're broken, that we're incomplete, that we're sinners. But not really in ways that I believe. like really, it's just kind of like when you go to church and someone, you know, says, yes, I'm a sinner, but they never really confess specific, nasty, horrible things they do. When we all do and think and say nasty, horrible things because we're sinners. And Kanye is someone that I relate to him on that level, where he is someone that is reaching for Christ, reaching for, you know, having peace and pleasing God and living a life that is in tune with his faith. But he comes at it from a place of not hiding at all how much of a struggle that is for him, and how sometimes it's not even just, oh man, shucks, I'm not doing really good. It's, I don't want to do good. And I think that is a very Christian approach. You know, Paul in the Bible talks about how Paul's like a super Christian, wrote half the New Testament, knew everything, you know, brought the news of Jesus to the rest of the world outside of the Jews. And he has a section in Romans 7 where he's saying, I do the things I don't want to do. I don't do the things that I want to do. And he's like, I'm a wretched man. Someone save me from this body of death. And when Kanye speaks as a man stuck in a lifestyle that is sometimes very dark, stuck on just the crap that we get ourselves into, that we choose for ourselves, that gets dumped on us, when he's speaking that language, that 100% resonates with me, because that's actually what life is like. It's not like what I hear on Christian radio. It's like what Kanye says, taking away the millions of dollars and the levels of debauchery he has access to that I don't. But at a heart level, he's my guy. That's the way I feel a lot of times.
Strip away all that stuff. You guys, you're the same guy. You guys are one and the same. You mentioned earlier, too, that in addition to getting back into some Yeezus, you've been listening to Kendrick Lamar's new record, Joey Badass, Lupe Fiasco. If a lot of my listeners might not know you, and just off of that alone, one can deduce that lyricism is important to you. How do you feel about the state of lyrical rap right now? I mean, Kendrick is kind of on top, or so it appears anyway. Again, we did an article about Big Sean recently. You have Drake putting out his mixtape back in February. Whether or not how lyrical he is or chooses to be is debatable. But, I mean, are you satisfied right now as someone who can dissect lyrics and understand the nuance of people, of couplets and putting together the structure of rhymes and things like that? Someone who is intelligent and cares enough about that sort of thing, how do you feel about the state of lyricism right now? And can it carry the industry? Can it be something that people really care about to the point that it guides the culture?
I'm at a weird spot because I am 100% content, mainly because I have the internet. See, I live in Springfield, Missouri. I'm a hick in the sticks. There is a rap station about once every 5 years that'll come and go because no one listens to it. So, like, what is, like, hot on the radio? Like, I'm aware, you know, I'm on, like, I try to keep up on, you know, mainstream what's happening. But I get the sense that yeah, a lot of the very best as far as lyricists are being heard. I wouldn't call J. Cole an amazing, brilliant lyricist, but I think that's his priority. And you know, he went platinum. So I think I'm actually pretty happy with where things are, and I think I'm just the kind of fan that I am. It doesn't really matter to me what is making the most money and what is playing the most in cities, just because I'm not in that context. But I think, yeah, I think having said that, the internet is like the biggest deal right now and has been for a while, and I think lyricism plays really well to the internet, and people are really interested in digging into hip hop, and they're still into you know, trap stuff that's not as lyrically heavy, but I still think there's a lot of room for people that really dig into the music, are not listening just for the beat. Although I think beat making is at a pretty good place now too. I'd say I'm pretty optimistic and pretty positive on it. I think 2015 has been a great year already for the music that's come out. So I don't see any reason not to be optimistic.
I think 2014 was kind of a down year for hip hop. I think everybody would pretty much agree with that. And these things are cyclical. You know, we had a lot of people, a lot of prominent artists drop albums in 2013, and then everybody went on tour, and then everybody took a break. And then 2014 kind of comes and goes, and there weren't a lot outside of like Ross and Jeezy. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of heavy hitters to put music out during that year in a formal album setting anyway. And then now this year, we're coming back in first quarter, like boom, 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 right down the line, we're having all these A-listers drop music. And it's funny about just understanding, like you said, that there's stuff on the radio, and then there's the stuff that you care about, and I, like you, kind of care about the same type of hip-hop music, but hip-hop is a very broad genre, as we know. I went to a party in Chicago recently, and it was for a young guy's party. Shout out my man Bahati, if you're listening. He had us up for his party in Chicago, And it was funny because they played a lot of rap music as the evening went on. Like, they had like a live band play some excellent music. And then once they left, then the DJ came in, and, you know, that's when the turn up happened. I hate that I just used that word, but yeah, that's what happened. And then there, at that point, they started playing a lot of songs that I had never even heard before. Now, I'm in my 30s. You know what I mean? And they were playing rap songs that I was not familiar with at all. And I felt a little bit embarrassed as a guy who runs a website about hip hop and a podcast about hip hop. And they're playing these songs and I'm like, I don't even know this stuff. And part of it is, you know, just because of where I'm located currently, it's kind of not too dissimilar of a situation with regards to radio. And part of it is just because if you're in a situation like that and you have the internet at your disposal, you're going to seek out what you want to seek out. And if you don't have an interest in that kind of music that is all about the beat and there's nothing behind the bars themselves, then you get put in a setting like that and you don't know what to make of it. So I kind of thought that was funny, just being in that kind of environment and just like just looking around like, what is going on right now?
As a, you know, someone that supposed to know hip-hop and do a hip-hop podcast, I walk around constantly in fear of just not knowing very basic popular understandings, popular songs, popular things that every hip-hop fan should know. I'm just constantly in fear that I've missed something. And I think I do miss a lot.
I mean, that stuff happens sometimes, man. I mean, I discovered Trap Queen not too long ago. I love that record. That's a fun record. And I may or may not refer to my wife as a Trap Queen. And she may or may not embrace that moniker. I'm just going to leave that like as that. And I mean, you got the Coco song, you know what I'm saying? Stuff like that. And even that stuff's not even really new now. But I mean, it's just like, you know, sometimes you get that stuff late. If you don't care about that kind of hip hop, then you kind of get that stuff late and you don't, you know, it's whatever. It kind of goes back to what Kendrick said on To Pimp a Butterfly. He basically had a line that was, I'm paraphrasing, but he said something to the effect of, you know, you guys say you care about music and about bars. Well, if that was the case, then Killer Mike would have been platinum or something like that. What was your takeaways from To Pimp a Butterfly, since that is the album right now that's at the forefront of the genre?
Yeah, that was a good line, because I love Killer Mike, and although I like Run the Jewels better than the latest Killer Mike album, was kind of flat to me. But, and so, you know, Kendrick is, before jumping into that, I would just like say, I think hip hop should be fun as well. Like, that's a big part of it. So, like, you know, I can get down with Migos. I can understand the Coco being a fun, popular song. So I'm not against it. So I think it's fine that stuff's popular too. It's not like, I'm not like worried that those things are going to spoil or corrupt, you know, quote unquote, true hip hop. But To Pimp a Butterfly, I honestly am hesitant to give final thoughts on it at this point. It's so dense. There's so much to it. I think he's definitely trying to take the mantle of the prototypical young rap kid who is, you know, wise beyond his years, who can and take it to another place, specifically as, you know, inspired by Tupac, as he obviously is on the album. I think the way that Kendrick Lamar uses characters blows me away. And what blows me away is that he claims that he doesn't read, books. And yet he has this just huge wealth of knowledge and insight into all these different kinds of people. Now, a lot of them are people he knows, you know, directly, you know, people from Compton and his albums or whatever. But he has this ability to go in character, and sometimes it's a character of someone that's not like himself. Sometimes it's, you know, Lucifer. Sometimes it's the ugly side inside of him. And I think regardless of where I might come out with on how effective his kind of arc for what he's trying to do from a thematic standpoint on To Pimp a Butterfly, I think he is definitely blowing most people out of the water with just the way he's doing it. He has really good music. He has really innovative, creative arrangements. He has all kinds of different flows he's throwing out. He is obviously, almost perfect a lot of times lyrically. He's doing a great job. He was aiming really high for, you know, the whole butterfly metaphor, and the way he's trying to frame Black life and trying to bring it to a higher place of positivity. Whether or not it does that, I probably need a lot more time because there's so much in there on whether I think it makes sense in the end. But he's coming from a real honest place, and the dude is so talented, and he's not holding back at all. So I love it. I just don't know exactly where I'm going to land with it in the end.
Well, this is why we tend to hold off on our Tale of the Tape reviews. We tend to give it a few weeks. You know, we're not one of those websites that puts out a review a day or two before the album drops. I never understand that. And I talked about that when I gave my breakdown of To Pimp a Butterfly on the last podcast. And so I think you're right that he's very creative in the characters that he uses, the voice inflections that he uses, the way he uses his voice as an instrument, which I think is second to none. But we're in this era where everything's on social media. Everybody has to give their thoughts on everything all the time, and that's just the way it is. And nobody wants to sound like an idiot, right? So what you have is you have people that are really insightful and intelligent people, and then you have people pretending to be really insightful and intelligent so that they can be part of that culture or that subculture, if you will. And I think that that's a real thing. And sometimes you hear people call it on social media, they call it fake deep. You know, you have people that are pretending to be deeper than what they really are, and they put these statuses or tweets out or whatever that make them sound a lot deeper than what they are, or they take posts from other people and post them to their Instagram to make themselves sound deep, when in actuality it's like, I know that guy. That guy's not deep at all. You know what I'm saying? That's a real thing. And I think part of that is now seeping into the music a little bit. Not so much from what Kendrick himself is doing. I'm not calling Kendrick fake deep, but what I'm saying is you have... people will listen to something like To Pimp a Butterfly, and because it is deep and because it is intelligent, more intelligent than the average rap record, you have people automatically putting the classic stamp on it right out the gate. Like, the album is 48 hours old, it dropped on accident, and it's like, oh, this is a classic already. And it's like, I was seeing classic all in my timeline that next day on Twitter, and I'm just thinking, like, is that fair? We can't really call this thing a classic, right? Like, that's ridiculous. It's not even 24 hours old. Like, but I think in a way that people try to not sound ignorant or not sound stupid on social media, they try to jump on the intelligence bandwagon as soon as possible. So it's like, Kendrick put out an album. Up, it's genius. Boom, done, case closed. And it's like, well, let's take some time to kind of examine and sift through all this. Where do you come out on people kind of jumping the gun on records like this and giving it the classic stamp right out the gate? Because, I mean, like I said, we don't even know the music yet.
It's dumb. Yeah. It's the thing that, like, specifically the Kendrick album, like, I think he's even said that. He's like, you know, people need to take more time before they're calling it a classic. But, like, most of the people that are so quick to praise stuff and praise it for what it is, I would bet money that, you know, the elements he's using on the album, I would bet money that most people that are that quick to label it classic really have never listened to jazz, have never listened to R&B, maybe have never listened to Tupac. Like, their frame of reference just is not deep enough for them to take in what that album is and immediately come out the other side and said, he did all of this really well. This is 10 out of 10, everything he put together. Where, you know, for all they know, the jazz could be trash. The thing with Tupac could have been done before. Like, all this stuff is very much a possibility. And it's just, you know, that's the way the internet is. It's groupthink. Everyone gets mad at the same thing at the same time. Everyone praises the same thing at the same time. And yeah, I'm much more interested in your approach, and I try to be that way too. And I'm not gonna. It is tempting though. Like, it's tempting to want to be on the bandwagon for what is cool at the time and what everyone's digging and what makes you, you know, look smart. But I try to be honest with myself and with anyone that would read or listen to me that things take time. I'm not that fast of an interpreter. I'm not that fast at turning something around and having really deep, real deep thoughts to say on it. And I'm pretty skeptical of those who do. You don't have to do a where does this rank all time review before when something is leaked immediately. So yeah, I'm kind of not interested in that kind of coverage and that kind of writing.
That fake hype, man, that fake hype is a dangerous thing. And sometimes it's like, okay, let that die down. Okay, now we can really kind of get into this record or, you know, whatever album. It's not just Kendrick's record, but it's any album. I think that that's a real thing that we as consumers of hip hop and social media beings need to be mindful of. This title stuff that's been in the news lately quite a bit with Jay-Z kind of running the show. He's purchased this streaming web service. I guess he purchased like maybe two different streaming web services or something like that. And now we have this title thing that's kind of been a bit of a tidal wave. Sorry for the terrible pun. That has kind of swept music, and we see these commercials, and it's all over Instagram. They're changing their Instagram face to the little teal color that represents the company, and it's a streaming web service that I guess is by artists for artists, for lack of a better term. Cray, explain real quick what Tidal is, and if you have any thoughts on it, because a lot of people think it's just a really pretentious thing that Jay-Z and his rich friends are getting together and launching this thing and forcing it on the public, which that's kind of how it almost comes off in the commercials.
Yeah, so it's a streaming service. It is a competitor with Spotify and the other streaming services, but it's got some features to make it supposed to be a more premium version, which is, you know, has lossless audio, which is better than all high quality and no standard definition stuff, which I think is still on a lot of Spotify tracks. And it's, their pitch is the number one, it's better. It's a better service. So that's why they're charging you twice as much per month to use it than you would for the premium Spotify account. And then also that it is, you know, like you said, they're changing their profile pictures blue. They're saying, you know, this is about artists. This is not just about another good service. It is about an artist-owned and ran thing. And so, you know, they've rolled out the red carpet, and I think most people thought it was pretty pretentious and pretty silly the way they did it, where they're lining up celebrity musicians on a stage, signing a contract up on the stage and giving kind of cliched speeches. But and the other knock is that, yeah, they're saying it's artist owned, but it's really just already super rich artists have buy-in, and it's the way for other artists to get more money off of it is pretty narrow, and it's still not a lot of money. It's still not like they would have, you know, not even close to have they sold their music versus getting pennies for people streaming it. So I'm kind of neutral on it. I don't subscribe to Spotify to begin with. I actually try not to use streaming services because I do think personally I would rather have to buy stuff from artists because I want to support artists. So I typically only stream stuff when it's like, you know, a first listen to a new album, to decide whether I want to get it or not. But I will say that Tidal is maybe at least consider it. The problem is I'm poor and I really can't afford that. And so that plays into the, you know, these folks are out of touch with what normal radio or what normal music listeners can afford. I think that's wrong. I think we spend all kinds of money on cable, Netflix, internet, phone bills, like, compared to all that stuff, it's not, you know, $20 a month is not an insane price for a service that you use that's the best quality service, especially if they have tons and tons of exclusives, which is what they're trying to do. The thing that I picked up on that is most interesting to me is the thing where they're changing their Facebook, they're shading their Instagram, Twitter profiles blue, Kanye's, you know, leading the charge saying change the world, do Tidal. And a lot of people that I also follow are like, where are all these bigwigs when you know, there's a police shooting? You know, where are they on the ground social concerns? They are out of touch is kind of the standard critique. I think there's probably some of that is fair, but get back to kind of where Kanye's at, and I think where Jay-Z wants to be as well, is they're not just into being mega rich people. They actually see their place in the culture as important, and they see if we can get on top of this huge, this is the way music is going and is already at, which is streaming. If we can get on top of this, this is important for us to, if we can do it, we should. You know, as a side benefit of, we will also profit immensely from it and we'll get all of that. But I honestly think that there's more to it than just out of touch rich guys that don't understand normal people anymore. I think that's probably not true.
Well, I'll say this, there is the notion that, like you said, there's all these super rich artists already that's kind of buying into this thing, and there's lesser known independent artists that are going to be struggling to either get a piece of the pie or to be heard on Tidal. We don't know what it's really going to look like yet, but I think that that's a fair concern for a lot of artists out there, because most artists aren't Kanye West, and most artists aren't Jay-Z, and most guys aren't Madonna or Daft Punk, the guys wearing the weird helmets at the commercial, at the table, at the business meeting, because they dress like that all the time because they have to stay in character, I guess. You know, not everybody are those guys. And so there's a lot of musicians out there that want to get their stuff played and they want to be heard. But, you know, it's kind of like, well, where do we fall into this whole thing? Because this kind of feels like, a boys club almost. But the other part of it is, I think that for a lot of people, there's a lot of people out there that I think genuinely. And you know, I've downloaded music before, and I've purchased music at the record store before, and I've you know, seen it all. I think the thing that people kind of have trouble with is sometimes on the internet you don't even have to look for the file sharing. Like, the file sharing will find you a lot of times, and you can just be online and it's just like, oh, this new album showed up, and it's one click away. And it's like, yeah, maybe I intended to spend $10, and maybe it turns out I don't even like the whole thing. That's a concern for people these days, whereas they can just be on their computer and not even trying to download anything illegally, but it just comes across their desk, you know what I mean? And I think that's a real issue for a lot of people. I think Tidal is it's creative, but I think that they're going to have to work through that initial backlash that they received, because I think there is some merit to it, as you pointed out. You know, where's all this union when there's real issues at hand? You know, we can get together for matters of money and things like that, but when there's real problems out there in the world, you know, and Kanye's using phrases like change the world when referencing this thing, people kind of lose sight of what really matters at the end of the day. And I think that's a real issue that Tidal's going to have to face. But the NBA playoffs, baby, playoffs! They're here. Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast, yo. Cray Allred is joining us this evening. Thank you for joining us again, Cray. Just had an awesome conversation about rap, and now we're gonna talk a little bit about basketball. As you pointed out earlier, you write for a publication called Welcome to Loud City, which is a blog about the Oklahoma City Thunder. You follow the Oklahoma City Thunder. I in the time that I've known you, I know that you are a very serious Oklahoma City Thunder fan, and you have got to be scared blankless right now, my friend, because your team is in danger of missing the playoffs. Let's start with Oklahoma City, man. Westbrook has been out of his mind pretty much since the All-Star game, and he's kind of slowing down, it looks like, right now. I don't know if it's something that has to do with him being just hurt and depressed that Kevin Durant's not coming back this year. And I don't know if it's something that is just, he's just tired, like physically tired from carrying the team night in and night out, getting a triple-double every single game. But what do you think is the long-term prognosis for your team, the Oklahoma City Thunder, because that's what this is really all about. I think everybody knows now that the Thunder are not going to win the NBA championship this year, and this is about year 6 or 7, I think, in the Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook tandem. Are you legitimately concerned going forward, given the constant speculation and rumors of both of their departures from Oklahoma City, something that I can relate to as a Cavaliers fan?
Yeah, so I'm pretty good at not worrying too much about the future. I'm honestly most worried about KD's foot at this point, which is a scary thing. But there's a, you know, most medical experts are saying, you know, historically what they just did to his foot is basically a 100% recovery thing, and no one should be worried. But it's hard not to be worried. But yeah, they might not make the playoffs. This has been just a dumpster fire season, and not because of really necessarily poor play or bad coaching, but mainly just injuries. And I didn't, the bad luck they've had the last couple of years, I didn't think they could top it, and they just blew it out of the water this year with just how everything went wrong. So long term, I'm actually, KD more and more, he doesn't, I'm of the opinion, and I was wrong about LeBron because I didn't think I didn't think there was any chance he was going back to Cleveland, and he did. But my reasoning for that was that just the Cleveland organization was kind of a joke for a while, with Dan Gilbert being the laughing stock part of that, I think, and kind of a clown the way he treated LeBron, but that was part of the process of him coming back, was hashing it out with him. I think through the injury, I think the injury actually makes it more likely KD stays. I think he has 100% trust in the Thunder organization. I think he loves playing with Russell Westbrook. He definitely loves the Oklahoma City. And I really think he's reluctant to say, you know, I'm coming back 100% guarantee. I really think he doesn't want to be a liar. I think he knows the possibility he could leave, but I think his heart's there, and I think that's where he wants to stay if everything goes right. And so the two ways of – this is a lost season. This is a terrible season we lost, because the speculation is going to blow up next year just because it's his last year. There's going to be no stopping it. But there are two ways of looking at it. So most people look at it as, you know, this year and next year was their last chance to win a championship with KD to convince him to stay. And then the other way of looking at it is, but if they do win a championship, or just if he's staying either way, this is not the end of an era. This is like their window opening, because they're so young still. So if we can look into a crystal ball and see into the future and know KD's going to be here for 10 years, with the core that they have and all these young pieces, and they just added more at the trade deadline this year, this is actually, you know, we should be just as positive as we were a few years ago when they hit the finals before everyone thought they could. So I'm just bummed about this season. But until he leaves, I've got some worry, but I'm more just pretty positive. It's not worth freaking out about and worrying about, and I'll just choose to believe that good times are ahead.
I love your optimism, and they are a young team, so one would think that these injuries, these are freak incidents and not something that's going to be a constant problem for them going forward, considering the nucleus is as young as it is. I mean, Durant's the old guy, and he's like, what, 26? I mean, it's ridiculous how young this team still is. And I think you raise a great point about the window still possibly being open. I think everybody's looking at it as a worst-case scenario situation. Now, everybody thinks that Oklahoma City's in dire straits. And in actuality, you know, if KD re-ups whenever his time is up, I don't know exactly when his contract is up, but it's soon, within the next year or two. But I think it's this summer, and then next summer I think it's Russ. But if and when they just re-up, then like you said, oh, presto, change-o, now all of a sudden you have two of the five best players in the league, And they're both still 25 years old, plus Serge Ibaka, plus Deion Waiters, Enes Kanter, and the list goes on and on. And I think one of the most underrated, underappreciated parts about the LeBron saga in Cleveland, and you kind of touched on the front office not making the best moves in the interest of keeping LeBron at all, you know, at every turn. But I think they attempted to, for one thing. And the other thing, but the part that's missed when people look back on the whole LeBron Cavaliers situation is that LeBron never allowed the organization to grow, and he never allowed the organization to put the team in a position where they could succeed for the long term. And by which I mean, LeBron constantly had them on a clock. He signed his first deal, he signed his rookie deal, when time came for him to re-up, he re-upped, but he only re-upped for a 3-year extension as opposed to a 5-year extension. And by doing so, he put management in a situation where, okay, now we have to do something quick or else he will leave. And that was the warning shot that he sent out. And next thing you know, you have the team making these drastic changes, like in, I think, 2008, when they traded away half the team at the trade deadline at the 11th hour. And that's when they got Delonte West and Wally Szczerbiak and Ben Wallace and all those guys. And it's just like they kept having to make these moves to acquire these older ball players with these heavy contracts because LeBron put the clock on them. And they were constantly living in fear and constantly operating out of fear when trying to build this team around them. Hopefully, the Thunder and Durant and Westbrook, if they want to make this thing last, can learn from that and sign lengthy extensions and put the situation to bed, because the sooner they do that, the quicker the team will be able to move forward and build the correct team around them rather than trying to do a rush job, which is kind of what the Cavaliers ended up doing. I'm off my soapbox on that. I've been screaming that for years, and people don't understand that portion of the LeBron story. But getting back to the Thunder really quickly, Westbrook has been amazing this year, and we said here on Hip Hop Sports Report that he was going to be a dark horse MVP candidate with Durant coming out of the gate injured, and no telling how long that injury is going to last. And it turns out I was right about that. However, Westbrook is probably going to fall short of MVP because he himself has been injured for much of the season. Put in perspective really quickly his season as a whole, because, I mean, it's been one of the most exciting single seasons from a player that I can remember in recent history, just from the injuries that he suffered with, to coming back quickly, to being just a maniac on the floor, to getting the dent in his face and the triple-doubles and all that.
I think people have taken notice. I think he's having an incredible season. He's such a freak, and he's such a tornado on the court. I think he is having, in a lot of ways, an MJ-type season. The numbers say that. And I think I don't think he should win the MVP. But when he was just really rolling, when he was averaging a triple-double, he was actually averaging a triple-double for over a month, and was having, for a stretch, you know, Oscar Robertson has the only season averaging a triple-double, but Russ's, like, per 36 numbers were better than Robertson's over that time. But anyway, I think he's, because he's fall. 2 weeks ago, I would have said if he keeps it up, he deserves the MVP, because it is basically, if Michael Jordan showed up, if you told someone before the season, you know, Michael Jordan's going to play peak Jordan, and he's going to miss the first 5 games and the last 8 games, and otherwise be dominant, they'd say, well, that's your MVP. You know, his team make the playoffs, and it's a trash team otherwise. But, and so that kind of, I don't like the kind of arbitrary stuff. Well, he can't, because people were saying that 3 months ago. Well, he can't because he missed. And I really think, because the time that Russ missed, which was the opening stretch, and they went 3-12, and so they've been a losing team for so much of the season, digging out of that hole, that people are just like, well, he can't. He's not allowed to win. You know, it's not he's not as good as these other guys. It's that he's not allowed. And on the other hand, I really believe had Steph Curry missed the last 10 games of the season and Golden State lost the last 10 games, he'd be just as likely to win the MVP. It's so much dominated by just kind of perception of the team and when you miss time and how your team does without you, and it's kind of arbitrary in my opinion.
Let's talk about the MVP a little bit, because you mentioned that a lot of it is perception. I don't disagree with that, and I'm not saying that you were doing this, but it sounded like you took a little subtle shot at Steph Curry's candidacy. Do you think he deserves the MVP, and if not, who gets it?
I'm actually torn between Steph and Harden. I have no shots at Steph. I love watching Steph play. I love watching Steph play a lot more than I like watching James Harden play. But it's just the kind of narrative BS that is very common in sports. Just, you know, people just say, "Oh, best player on best team has to win it." It's like, no, they don't. But it doesn't have to happen that way. But he's incredible. He is, you know, has a chance of going down as the best shooter of all time if he keeps this up. And I would probably lean to giving it to him. I think what Harden has done is has been, if Harden gets the Rockets to the 2 seed, which it doesn't look like he'll do anymore, but he had him there for a little bit, that would have been a tougher call for me. But everything that has worked in Golden State on the offensive end is 100% because Steph Curry is there. They would not be as high scoring, efficient, perfect shots every time down the court, tons and tons of threes. Like, it just wouldn't work without him. He is the motor to it, even if it doesn't look the same way that it does when Harden is dribbling 20 times every down the court. So, yeah, I'd probably give it to Steph. I love Steph. Had Harden got the Rockets, which are a much worse roster than Golden State, if he got them the 2 seed, I might have given it to him. But I'd say right now, Steph probably deserves it.
What's funny is that you spoke about the narrative, and you know, I don't like narratives a lot of times, and friend of the podcast, Anthony Houston, hates the quote-unquote narrative. Understandably so, but what's funny about that is looking at the Western Conference standings, the Rockets lost to the Spurs last night, and they slipped from third to sixth, and San Antonio jumped from sixth to third, even though their records are close to identical. But again, that perception, like, if the season ended today, then it's like, oh, well, the Rockets are only the sixth seed in the West. And it's like, well, James Harden can't win MVP because the Rockets were only the sixth seed. Well, third seed sounds a lot better, but just the way that the parameters of the seedings play out with division winners getting preferential treatment and the Rockets and Spurs being in the same division, and the Spurs move a half game ahead of Houston, and it automatically drops them down 3 spots in the standings, that kind of torpedoes Harden's candidacy in a lot of respects. And so it's just weird kind of how the dynamic of the standings can have such an impact. I agree with you that the player that's the best player on the best team does not always have to win MVP. I think that a lot of times that player is deserving, and I think that he's deserving this year. Stephen Curry, he would get my hypothetical vote just because, and again, it's no knock on James Harden. He's been unbelievable this year, and he's just dragging a pretty lifeless Houston Rockets roster. Even the roster itself has been marred by injury, and he's been dragging them to the playoffs. But when I watch Stephen Curry, man, I just feel like I'm watching something special. And I think there's something to be said for having those MVP moments. And this just feels like the year of Stephen Curry. And just watching him break the 3-point single season record that was his own record the other night was something special. And every night is just must see TV with that kid. And he's just doing things that we've never seen before on a basketball court. And so I think that when you factor in the record along with the type of season that he's having, I don't know how he doesn't get the award. When I watch him play, I just think he's better at basketball than James Harden is. And that's no knock on James Harden. Again, I think James Harden is a terrific player. He's definitely one of the 10 best players in the NBA in general. This season, certainly one of the 5 best. But it's just, I mean, that kid's Curry, man. I just watch him and I'm in awe. Every time he takes the floor and he's doing stuff, the quick release, the playing without the ball, the getting his teammates involved, the creating his own shot when necessary, all that stuff is just, it's just special stuff. I wanted to get your thoughts on the playoffs quickly also, just in general. A lot of people seem to believe that there's only three teams that can win the NBA championship, and that would be the Cavaliers in the East and the Warriors and Spurs in the West. That's kind of been prevailing wisdom of late from talking heads. Do you subscribe to this theory? And if not, who do you see prevailing in the playoffs? With the understanding that a lot of it depends on how the matchups shake out.
I would say those are the three favorites. I would agree with that. I give Atlanta credit. I really believe in their coach and their system. If Millsap isn't playing or isn't 100%, then I would say no, they can't win it. But yeah, those are my four teams. I don't really see. I want to say maybe throw the Clippers up there, but their bench is so bad. But on the other hand, Chris Paul gets, you know, he has not had too many successful runs in the playoffs, and I think he's capable of just going supernova one playoff season. So, but outside of that, I wouldn't give anyone else too much of a chance. I'd say Golden State's definitely the favorite to win it. You know, history says the type of season they're having, they will win it. Cleveland has LeBron, and they've been playing awesome after a rough start. And then San Antonio, returning champs, they've won 10 in a row. I would not be shocked at all if they won it. And I'd probably like to see them win it, because I think that would be a cool potential end of a dynasty as far as the Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, Ginobili era. But yeah, I'd throw Atlanta in there, and then if you want a dark horse, I'd say maybe the Clippers, but I wouldn't put any money on it for sure.
I agree. I think the Atlanta Hawks' season has gone understated. I don't think they're going to come out of the Eastern Conference. I think the Cavs are going to come out the East, but I do think that the Hawks have been great this year. And just because the Hawks may not make it to the finals, people, doesn't make them a fraud. Because I have a feeling that as soon as the Hawks lose, everybody's going to come out the woodwork and say that they were frauds all year. And no, it doesn't work like that. If they get to the conference finals, then they were a legitimate contender because they were one of four teams left. So I don't want to hear any of this Atlanta was a fraud stuff if they make it past the second round. But beyond that, Millsap is hurt. Cephalosha broke his leg in that nightclub mess, and he's out. So that team is kind of literally and figuratively limping to the finish line, so I'm concerned about them. But I think the Cavaliers are going to prevail in the East regardless. And out West, I totally agree that the Clippers are the team that I would classify as the dark horse with the best shot, because they have Paul and Blake and DeAndre, and those guys are very talented. They have a coach that's done it before. If the bracket breaks the right way, if somehow the Clippers end up on the opposite side of the West bracket as the Spurs and Warriors, and the Spurs and Warriors have to play each other in the second round, if that happens somehow, then the Clippers will be on cloud nine, because I think they can kind of clear their way to the conference finals and have to only go through one of those teams to get to the finals. We'll have to leave it there. We had a fantastic podcast this evening with Mr. Cray, All Red Cray. Once again, thank you very much for joining us on a Saturday evening, and tell us everywhere in the internets where we can find you.
Oh, man. Well, thanks again for having me on. It's been fun. I'm on Twitter at Cray All Red. You can find me on the internet at Sunday Old School. Old School spelled with a K. SundayOldSchool.com. We also have a Twitter at Sunday Old School. And yeah, that's probably enough. I could give you a bunch of others. So appreciate the time, man.
Well, and we got the Welcome to Loud City blog also, correct?
Yeah, Welcome to Loud City. I just go on the SB Nation and scroll over to the Thunder page. That's where we're at.
That's awesome. Thank you again for joining us this evening. Thank you all for listening. HipHopSportsReport.com is the website, of course. Find us on Twitter and Stitcher for the podcast. Find us on Twitter, find us on iTunes and Stitcher for the podcast. Find us on Twitter and Facebook, twitter.com/HHSReport. We got a lot of big changes coming in store. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. We see y'all on a Saturday night. My God, I think I need to get some rest. Hip Hop Sports Report signing off. Preseason podcast of the year. Later, y'all. Peace.